This episode of our podcast today is about what I consider to be the most fantastic of all mysterious topics, and I hope everyone finds it to be as well. I do not, however, want you to take my word for it, or even the word of the foremost researcher in this field today, who we refer to often, William Buhlmann. William's compilation of materials on this subject will allow you to prove this to yourself, if you so choose. And I would enjoy hearing from anyone who chooses to do so. Now, on with the show.
Welcome to Mysterious Topics, a podcast focusing on intriguing topics deserving further scrutiny. Each episode, the hosts examine a topic, add their opinions, and hopefully pique your interest as well. Visit MysteriousTopics.com for contact information and more. Now, here are your hosts, Chuck and John.
Hi, John.
Hello, Chuck, and hello to everyone. Before we get started, I'd just like to mention our Amazon link at our MysteriousTopics.com website. If you're going to be doing shopping there, if you'd go to our website first and click on our link, a little ad to Amazon, we'll get a little credit for that without it costing you anything extra, and we would really appreciate that support of our website and our podcast moving forward. Now, today's topic is going to be something a little bit different than we've done before. We've covered many topics over the past 2 years that are very interesting to consider, and none of those, however, have the potential to be as life-changing as the topic we are going to be discussing today, and that is out-of-body experience, or OBEs.
John, you have shown considerable interest in this topic, out-of-body experiences. In fact, when we first started doing the podcast about 2 years ago, it was one that you mentioned you really wanted to do, and we're finally getting around to it now. And as we go along, I think our listeners are going to find you and me coming from perhaps different approaches. I know you have an intense interest in the topic, and it's something that you want to actually take part in, and I'm probably not the same way. So we'll see as we go along how that turns out.
Well, Chuck, you and I have had these conversations before when we weren't recording them, and they were always very interesting. And you're right, we were coming from two different angles on the subject. But that's what's going to make this really good today, I think, because of that. And that's why we're doing it now. I always wanted to do this topic justice and always felt that, there was just more I could learn about it, more I could learn. And now that you are going to be leaving soon, I mean, we have to do it now. So that's why we're doing it now.
All right. Well, let's start with some background information. An out-of-body experience, which is an OBE, it's sometimes referred to as an OOBE. It's an experience that typically involves a sensation of floating outside one's body and, in some cases, perceiving one's physical body from a place outside of one's body, which is termed otoscopy. The term out-of-body experience was introduced in 1943 by George N. M. Tyrrell in his book Apparitions, and was adopted by researchers such as Celia Green and Robert Monroe as an alternative to belief-centric labels such as astral projection, soul travel, or spirit walking. OBEs can be induced by brain traumas, sensory deprivation, near-death experiences, dissociative and psychedelic drugs, dehydration, sleep, and electrical stimulation of the brain, among others. It can also be deliberately induced by some. 1 in 10 people have an OBE once, or more commonly, several times in their life. The Monroe Institute's Nancy Penn Center is a facility specializing in out-of-body experience induction. The Center for Higher Studies of the Consciousness in Brazil is another OBE training facility. As we're going along here, John, I'm imagining many of our listeners thinking they actually have places where you can be trained to do this, and I think many listeners would not be aware of that.
Yes, they actually do.
The International Academy of Consciousness in southern Portugal features the Projectarium, which is a spherical structure dedicated exclusively for practice and research on out-of-body experience. Olaf Blanc's Laboratory of Cognitive Neuroscience has become a well-known laboratory for OBE research. In many cases, people who claim to have had an OBE report being on the verge of sleep or being already asleep shortly before the experience.
And that state, as you're falling asleep, is known as hypnagogia, and that is the experience of a transitional state from wakefulness to sleep. In opposition, hypnopompia denotes the onset of wakefulness. The related words from the Greek are agagos, leading, inducing, pomp, act of sending, and hypnos, which is sleep. Mental phenomena that occur during this threshold consciousness phase include lucid dreaming, hallucinations, and sleep paralysis. And let me just add a little comment there about them calling them hallucinations. They may see things, but are they actually hallucinations? I would probably say that they may not be. Threshold consciousness, commonly called half asleep, half awake, or mind awake, body asleep, describes the same mental state of someone who is moving towards sleep or wakefulness, but has not yet completed the transition. Such transitions are usually brief, but can be extended by sleep disturbance or deliberate induction, for example, during meditation. Borderland state is another term for the hypnagogic state. Hypnagogic hallucinations are often auditory or have an auditory component. Like the visuals, hypnagogic sounds vary in intensity from faint impressions to loud noises, such as crashes and bangs, which is also known as exploding head syndrome. People may imagine their own name called, crumpling bags, white noise, or a doorbell ringing. Snatches of imagined speech are common, while typically nonsensical and fragmented. These speech events can occasionally strike the individual as apt comments on or summations of their thoughts at the time. They often contain wordplay, neologisms, and made-up names. Hypnagogic speech may manifest as the subject's own inner voice or as the voices of others, familiar people, or strangers. More rarely, poetry or music is heard. Now, Chuck, have you ever experienced this when you were taking a nap or maybe in the middle of the night where all of a sudden a loud noise wakes you up and you think it was a very loud noise, but nothing happened in the house, or maybe you heard somebody talking to you?
Well, as far as the loud noises are concerned, yeah, I hear those a lot. I think they are real many times. A lot of times there's animals running around on our deck and knocking things over. But sometimes there's no apparent cause or reason for the noise, and that may be what we're talking about here. So yeah, to answer your question, I definitely have experienced that.
I have had that too, and I've had times when I've heard people calling my name, for instance. Mm-hmm. It's just as clear as, and I wake up, I was asleep, and I wake up, and it's just kind of really interesting when that happens.
Yeah, that part about calling your name, I've experienced that, I wouldn't say frequently, but a few times in my life. Often, when I do hear it, it's my father who's no longer alive, and he'll just say, Chuck, and I just think I imagine it, but I do believe that I actually hear that my name called, and I don't know if it's just my imagination or what it is, but yes, I do hear that. I just wanted to say something about that hypnagogia, that experience of transitional state from wakefulness to sleep. For me, at least, that transitional period is at a point where I don't want to be bothered. It must be really pleasurable or something to go from that wakefulness to sleep, that it's a point where if somebody attempts to wake me at that point, I'll say no, or I'll think, please, no, let me sleep. And I don't know if that's just me or if that's a common experience.
Yeah, well, the hypnagogic state is the one when you're falling asleep. I don't usually have anybody trying to wake me up right after I went to sleep, but maybe in the waking stages. Yeah, I understand what you mean.
It happens to me, not a lot, but once in a while, if my wife and I happen to be watching television and she'll notice that I'm falling asleep and she'll suddenly wake me, and that's when it happens. And I think, oh no, let me sleep.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I can understand that. That would be irritating to be awakened at that point because you're already just about asleep and now you got to start all over again. Although it's usually never a problem for me.
Yeah, usually for me either. And I can understand my wife doesn't want to watch whatever we were watching by herself if we started watching something, so I understand her position too.
Yeah.
Okay, well, continuing on. Humming, roaring, hissing, rushing, zapping, and buzzing noises are frequent in conjunction with sleep paralysis. This happens when the REM atonia sets in sooner than usual, before the person is fully asleep, or persists longer than usual after the person has, in other respects, fully awakened. Sleep paralysis is reportedly very frequent among narcoleptics. It occurs frequently in about 6% of the rest of the population, and occurs occasionally in 60%, so a little bit over half. In surveys from Canada, China, England, Japan, and Nigeria, 20 to 60% of individuals reported having experienced sleep paralysis at least once in their lifetime. The paralysis itself is frequently accompanied by additional phenomena. Typical examples include a feeling of being crushed or suffocated, electric tingles or vibrations, imagined speech, like you just mentioned, John, and other noises. The imagined presence of a visible or invisible entity, and sometimes intense emotion, such as fear or euphoria, and orgasmic feelings. Sleep paralysis has been proposed as an explanation for at least some alien abduction experiences. The old hag and shadow people hauntings. I just want to mention about that old hag. I wasn't quite sure what that was about. It was a nightmare spirit in English and North American folklore. According to the folklore, the old hag sat on a sleeper's chest and sent nightmares to him or her. And when the subject awoke, he or she would be unable to breathe or even able to move for a short period of time. That'd be kind of scary.
Yes, it would. And the shadow people, I think we may have talked about a little bit. I don't think we've ever done a whole podcast on it, but this could be an explanation for that. When you awaken in the middle of the night and you see a dark figure somewhere in your room and you can't make anything else out but a dark figure, and you're startled, and then all of a sudden it's gone. Now, it could have been someone's in the process of an OBE, whether it was you or someone sleeping in the house with you. But well, we can talk about this more.
Yeah.
As we go along.
And as far as that shadow people sensation, I have experienced that at times, but it's almost always in the periphery of my vision. I kind of get a look to the side, and I imagine, or I think I see some shadowy figure. It doesn't need to be a person. I often think it's an animal running along the side of the wall or something.
Yes, I'm the same way. I've never actually stared straight at a figure. I think if I did do that, waking up in the dark room, I probably would freak out at that point. But yes, all of mine are the same way, where you see something moving out of the corner of your eye.
Yeah. Well, continuing on, many people report seeing a flash of light or some other visual image in response to a real sound. This brings to mind the experience many migraine sufferers come across when they begin having a migraine or precede a migraine, the flash of light or some visual image that shows up in their mind, at least. Okay, proprioceptive effects may be noticed with numbness and changes in perceived body size and proportions, feelings of floating or bobbing, and out-of-body experiences. Perhaps the most common experience of this kind is the falling sensation. That's one I get a lot. I'll jump and my wife will say to me, "What's the matter?" And I will have just experienced that falling sensation. An associated hypnic jerk encountered by many people, at least occasionally, while drifting off to sleep. And I know I've had that.
Well, we've got a lot of ground to cover with this paragraph that you just read. But first of all, the hypnic jerk, we've all experienced, I think, anyway, most people have experienced that, where you're in that hypnagogic state, you're almost asleep if you aren't already, and all of a sudden you just get this jerk where your whole body jerks and you're startled and you're awake again.
Mm-hmm.
That's what that is. More on that in a minute. But when you read in the beginning about how that this sleep paralysis is reported in over half the people, over 60% of the people have felt that. But I would contend that much closer to 100% of the people experience it. It's just that they don't become conscious during it most of the time. It's happening while they're asleep.
Isn't it a body's defense mechanism in a sense? Because often in dreams, you might want to run around or start hitting people or whatever. And by being paralyzed or having some kind of paralysis, you can't do that. You can't hurt yourself or somebody next to you.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. And not only that, the reason, as we'll find out here as we start discussing this topic further, that it's happening is because your consciousness is now leaving your body for a period of time. So it basically, like when it's the same thing, Chuck. This is the only analogy I can think of now, is when you're driving your car somewhere and you get there and you stop, you turn it off. You don't want it going anywhere while you're not there. So it's kind of the same thing, I would guess anyway.
Yeah, probably is.
Okay, before we go on here, I've got other comments on a lot of this. You said something about the vibration or electric tingles. And okay, so this is where the story starts for me. When I was at a relatively young age, and I can't remember when it happened, I think I was probably a young teenager and on through my early 20s, I would have this often where I was in that hypnagogic state, and all of a sudden I would get a sudden, what I would call almost like just exactly that, and it felt like electricity was rushing through my head. It would happen all of a sudden, and it would scare me, and I thought there was something physically wrong with me. And in my early 20s, once I was a young adult, I actually told my doctor about it. My doctor at the time, who was very homeopathic aware and, you know, a very good doctor. I remember when I told him, I was getting, you know, I explained it just like that. It's almost like an electric shock. But as soon as I would jump from it, it would go away. And he looked at me for like 5 seconds and just said, And he did run tests. He ran a brain scan and some other things and found, you know, everything was normal. So that made me feel a little better about it. But I just thought, well, what the heck is it? There's nothing wrong with me, but why is that happening? And it would happen fairly often.
I just wanted to ask you, or I wanted to comment, I was thinking that maybe your doctor was wondering if you might have an early form of epilepsy or something.
Yeah, I'm sure he was thinking all that stuff. So it was at this point, Chuck, that I actually heard an interview on a show that you told me about, and you could listen to it. This might have been when podcasts was first starting. And I heard an interview with the person we're going to be talking about a lot today. And I was absolutely stunned hearing him. I had never heard of this. I've heard the term before. I never knew what it was. And he described perfectly these symptoms that I was having. And I've realized then what was happening. I was just absolutely amazed. And I've been studying this ever since. And the following that we're going to be reading here is an excerpt from that person that I heard, William Buhlmann, in his book, Adventures Beyond the Body, describing how he first discovered what would become his lifelong pursuit of adventures beyond the body. I possess the arrogant knowledge of a man who judges the world with his physical senses alone. I supported my conclusions with the overwhelming observations provided by science and technology. After all, if something mysterious was there, science would certainly be aware of it. My firm convictions of reality and life continued until June of 1972. During a conversation with a neighbor, our discussion turned to the possibilities of life after death and the existence of heaven. I proceeded to present my agnostic viewpoints with vigor. To my surprise, my neighbor didn't contest my conclusions. Instead, he related an experience he had had several weeks before. One evening, just after drifting to sleep, he was shocked to discover himself floating above his body, completely awake and aware. He became frightened and instantly went back into his physical body. Excited, he told me it wasn't a dream or his imagination, but a fully conscious experience. Intrigued by his experience, I decided to investigate this strange phenomenon for myself. After several days of research, I discovered numerous references to out-of-body experience throughout history. With some searching, I found a book on the topic that actually described how OBEs are induced. The entire subject seemed extremely weird, and I considered the book the result of an overly active imagination.
Out of curiosity, I decided to try one of the OBE techniques before sleep. After repeated daily attempts, I began to feel a little ridiculous. In 3 weeks, the only thing I experienced out of the norm was an increase in my dream recall. I became more and more convinced that this entire subject was nothing more than an intense or vivid dream stimulated by the so-called OBE techniques. Then, one night about 11 p.m., I drifted off to sleep during my out-of-body technique and began dreaming that I was sitting at a round table with several people. They all seemed to be asking me questions related to my self-development and state of consciousness. At that moment in the dream, I began to feel extremely dizzy, and a strange numbness, like from Novocaine, began to spread throughout my body. Unable to keep my head up, I passed out, hitting my head on the table. Instantly, I was awake, fully conscious, lying in bed facing the wall. I could hear an unusual buzzing sound and felt somehow different. Extending my arm, I reached for the wall in front of me. I stared in amazement as my hand actually entered the wall. I could feel the vibrational energy of it as if I was touching its very molecular structure. Only then did the overwhelming reality hit me. My God, I'm not in my body. Excited, my only thought was, it's real. My God, it's real.
Lying in my bed, I stared at my hand in disbelief. When I tried clenching my fist, I could feel the pressure of my grip. My hand felt completely solid, but the physical wall in front of me looked and felt like a dense, vaporous material with form. Determined to stand, I began to move effortlessly to the foot of my bed, my mind racing with the reality of it all. Standing, I quickly touched my arms and legs, checking to see if I was solid, and to my surprise, I was completely solid, completely real, but the familiar physical objects in my room no longer appeared completely real or solid. Instead, they now looked like three-dimensional mirages. Glancing down, I noticed a large lump in my bed. Amazed, I could see that it was the sleeping form of my physical body silently facing the wall. As I focused my vision on the opposite side of the room, the wall seemed to fade slowly from view. In front of me, I could see a wide green field extending far beyond my room. Looking around, I noticed a figure silently watching me from about 10 yards away. It was a tall man with dark hair, a beard, and a purple robe. Startled by his presence, I became frightened and instantly snapped back into my body.
Right there, probably think he was at the pearly gates or something.
Yeah.
He had died. That tall man with the dark hair and a beard and a purple robe.
Yeah, that would startle just about anyone at that point, I would think.
Yeah. Continuing on with the jolt, I was in my body and a strange feeling of numbness and tingling faded as I opened my eyes. Excited, I sat up, my mind exploding with the realization of what had just occurred. I knew it was absolutely real, not a dream or my imagination. My entire ego awareness had been present. Suddenly, everything I had ever learned about my existence and the world had to be reappraised. I had always seriously doubted that anything beyond the physical world existed. Now, my entire viewpoint changed. Now, I absolutely knew that other worlds do exist and that people like myself must live there. Most important, I now knew that my physical body was just a temporary vehicle for the real me inside, and with practice, I could separate from it at will. Excited about my discovery, I grabbed a pen and paper and wrote down exactly what had occurred. A flood of questions filled my mind. Why is the vast majority of the human race unaware of this? Why aren't the various sciences and religions investigating it? Is it possible that this unseen world is the heaven referred to in religious texts? Why isn't the government exploring this apparent parallel energy world? Is it possible that our overwhelming dependence on physical perceptions has led us to overlook an incredible avenue of exploration and discovery?
As the initial shock of my first experience sank in, I realized that my life could never be the same again. The more I pondered the significance of my experience, the more profound I realized it to be. All my agnostic beliefs had been swept away in a single night. I knew that I had to reappraise everything that I had learned since childhood, everything that I had assumed to be true, my comfortable conclusions about science, psychology, religion, and my existence had obviously been based on incomplete information. I felt excited but also uneasy. My familiar concepts of reality no longer seemed relevant. Increasingly, I felt a void. On several occasions when I talked to my friends about my experience, they found it too bizarre to take seriously. In 1972, the term out-of-body experience had not even been coined. The most common description back then was astral projection. No one that I knew at that time had even heard of astral projection. If you told people you had left your body, they immediately thought that you were on drugs or losing your mind. I quickly discovered that I had to keep my experiences to myself or face some degree of disbelief and even ridicule. And Chuck, I can understand why he would feel that way at that time, and I would understand why people would even feel that way today.
Okay, John, just imagine that tonight you had an out-of-body experience, and it was really tremendous and exciting and exhilarating for you. Would you feel comfortable going to work tomorrow and telling almost everybody that you knew at work what happened?
I would not tell people at work because I don't know very many open-minded people at work, or at least if they are, I'm not aware of it. But I would tell people here, and I'm going to tell people here today about those experiences.
Okay. Well, who is William Buhlmann? William Buhlmann's 43 years of extensive personal out-of-body explorations give him a unique and thought-provoking insight into this subject. His first book, Adventures Beyond the Body, chronicles his personal journey of self-discovery through out-of-body travel and provides the reader with the preparation and techniques that can be used for their own adventure. He has conducted an international out-of-body experience survey that includes over 16,000 participants from 42 countries. The provocative results of this survey are presented in his book, The Secret of the Soul. This cutting-edge book explores the unique opportunities for personal growth and profound spiritual awakenings that are reported during out-of-body experiences. His most recent book is titled Adventures in the Afterlife. William was inspired to explore the afterlife as a result of his confrontation with mortality following a cancer diagnosis in 2011. His lucid dreams and out-of-body experiences during his treatment and recovery period provided mind-bending visions that were so illuminating that he felt compelled to journal his experience. Insights that are provided in this book will assist the reader to navigate the many thought-responsive environments in the afterlife.
Over the past two decades, William has developed an effective system to experience safe, self-initiated out-of-body experiences. He conducts an in-depth workshop with the Monroe Institute titled Out-of-Body Exploration Intensive. This unique workshop provides the steps, intention, and techniques designed for controlled out-of-body exploration. Each participant will experience a comprehensive array of proven OBE methods, including the target technique, inner motion, visualization, chakra, and energy body activation. In addition, hypnotic, shamanic, and early morning methods will be practiced. As a certified hypnotherapist, William incorporates various methods in his workshops to explore the profound nature of out-of-body experiences and the benefits of accelerated personal development. Through lectures, workshops, and his books, the author teaches the preparation and techniques of astral projection and spiritual exploration. The author brings a refreshing look to how we can use out-of-body experiences to explore our spiritual identity and enhance our intellectual and physical lives. William is best known for his ability to teach people how to have profound spiritual adventures through the use of out-of-body experiences. In addition, he has developed an extensive series of audio and video programs that are designed to expand awareness and assist in the exploration of consciousness. William has appeared on numerous television and radio shows worldwide, and his books are currently available in 10 languages. And since I first heard him interviewed and found out about him, I have gotten all his books that are out to this point, and there's another one coming out. It will be out by the time people hear this. And I have a lot of his audio help guides as well. And I've gotten them all. I've listened to them, but I haven't extensively gone through it to make it to have a self-initiated one. But I will talk about some experiences that I've had that happened spontaneously as we go along here. And I will say that if anybody is interested in this, that I highly recommend William Buhlman's material on this subject. And there are other people out there that have material on how to do this. However, William is the one I know of who stresses the positive in the OBE, which I believe is very important for reasons that we will get into today.
The following list is from a survey of symptoms which are often preludes leading up to OBEs or the aftermath from an OBE. Along with the symptoms are the percentage of OBE experiencers reporting each symptom. The original list is at William Buhlman's website. These are not symptoms of OBEs themselves. This was only a preliminary poll and feedback from those who feel they may have experienced OBEs. William Buhlman also acknowledges that many of these experiences or symptoms can be experienced in fully conscious waking states. The fact that someone has a handful of these symptoms does not automatically mean they have had an OBE. Now, Astral Travel or OBE Survey Results Part 1. Commonly reported phenomena associated with out-of-body experiences. Now, this is based on 16,185 responses. Now, we're going to go through these, and then we'll discuss each one as we go along. The first one is, experienced a jolt or a jerk awake, and we talked about that, John, and I know I have, and I think you feel the same way.
And I guess that just about everybody has had this experience, and of these people that are responding to William's questionnaire on OBE experiences, 98%.
So that's almost everybody.
Yes.
Number two is experience sounds such as buzzing, humming, or roaring. Now, here, 85%, which is a large or high number also.
Yeah, and I am among that.
I have heard the buzzing. I usually hear it. I haven't heard it recently, but there was probably a period in my life, maybe 10, 15 years ago, where I would hear it often, and it almost always happened when I was in bed after sleeping all night, and I would just lay there. Maybe I would doze off to sleep again, and somewhere along that line, I would hear this electrical buzzing sound, and I think it was real. Maybe it was just a man.
That's interesting, because I don't think you've ever told me that before.
Oh.
And my experience with the vibrational or buzzing feeling, and it's a hearing and a feeling. You actually, you feel it as well as hear it. But mine always happens in the hypnagogic state when I'm falling asleep.
Ah.
Or in the middle of the night.
Okay.
I will be awakened by it. And, well, we'll get into this more, but when it happens, you are hyper aware. So in other words, it's not a dream. I mean, there's no way. You're completely, you're more awake than you are when you're awake during the day. You're just hyper aware from being completely asleep to being hyper aware in no time.
And I have to say, I don't think I've thought of the sensation as being unpleasant. It caught my attention. I think, what's going on here? I thought it was just some noise in my ear or something, but it was definitely strange, or it is definitely strange when I do experience it.
Yeah, so when I didn't know what it was quite literally a shock. So but as soon as I would be apprehensive about it, and then I'd jerk or something, and it would go away right away, which was very interesting to me. But now that I know what it is, you can not be shocked by it and allow it to continue.
The next one, third one, experienced vibrations or high energy sensations. Now, a little over half, 56% of these responses experienced
that. Yes, and I would say that's just if you, as I just said, if you allow this electrical feeling, buzzing, to continue, it would evolve into that. So you'd get used to it. It would turn from a more of a shocking buzzing to more of a, as it just says here, vibration or a high energy sensation.
I'm not sure what a high energy sensation would be, so I can't tell you if I had that or not. Probably vibrations. I'm not sure about the vibrations, at least from my personal experience. And the fourth one, experience floating, sinking, or spinning sensations. Now here, over 3/4 of the population, 82% have experienced that. And I think I have experienced every one of those.
Yes, and so have I. And it's kind of interesting. I'll just say they're talking about sinking, or, well, definitely the floating. And I'll talk about that more as we go on. But the sinking. Now, I always thought this was interesting when I started researching this area many years ago. They talk about sinking, or you get the feeling of flying or falling. Well, many people have had falling dreams.
Oh, definitely me.
And that's, I read somewhere somebody saying, well, that's where the term falling asleep came from.
Uh-huh.
So you're actually, they say that everyone, when you sleep at night, everyone disconnects from their body somewhat. And so, in other words, everybody's having some sort of slight out-of-body experience.
Mm-hmm. As far as the spinning sensations are concerned, I sometimes associate that with my neck maybe being turned too far one side or the other when I'm in the sleep position. Maybe I've got it bent a certain way, and maybe it was a physical thing that because of my positioning that I would experience that. But I think I've experienced it just being flat on my back and looking straight up, and I probably have experienced that too.
So you've said you've experienced, you feel a floating?
Yeah, not very often.
Is it a floating? Are you above the bed?
No, it's just a feeling of almost lightness.
Okay.
Like I'm laying in bed and I just feel like I'm light.
Yeah.
But I don't feel myself going up or anything like that.
And the next one is experience sleep paralysis. And we talked about that, but that was 72% of the people say they experienced that. Mm-hmm. And that would be logical to think that if these people are responding to an out-of-body experience questionnaire, then they are aware of it, and they would notice that their physical body felt paralyzed at that time.
Right. And we mentioned flying in a dream. 81%, fairly large number, experienced that. And
oh, these are some of my favorite dreams.
you like those, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Where do you go when you're flying?
Well, I've had different dreams. Some I'm actually flying a little airplane and I never got my pilot's license and I'm actually piloting the plane. I take off and I go up and flying around and actually it's an awesome feeling. And there's another one where I was riding a bike and I was riding in this kind of nice area of some town that I wasn't aware of. I was actually riding on a sidewalk and then up on top of a brick wall for some reason. And then the next thing I know, I am pedaling my bike just like in the movie E.T.
I can picture that.
In the air. And I'm looking down and it looked like it was New York City because there was a lot of tall buildings around. And I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, I should be falling and I'm not. And it was just the neatest feeling. And I just kept pedaling the bike around. And then it ended and I just woke up.
Yeah, as far as me flying in a dream, when you mentioned piloting a plane, now that you mentioned that, I remember on different occasions in dreams, I would be flying or piloting a small plane. And I would usually be up there in that plane and thinking to myself, I don't know how to fly. How can I be doing this? I don't know how to, I'm not a pilot.
Yeah.
It just didn't seem like I should be doing that.
And I just remembered another dream I had when I was a teenager. I dreamed of playing basketball. I was playing basketball in my dream with my friends at the school I was going to. And I jumped up in the air with the ball and I was able to just stay there. And I just kept going through the air towards the hoop, like full court. And so, yes, I've had dreams like that. And they're all indications that you're having an OBE.
What about being touched or lifted? One third of the people experience that, John.
Being touched, I had one experience where I was being touched. And, well, I guess I'll talk about that one right now. So during the vibrational state, I was having a vibrational state. And one of the techniques that William Buhlmann discusses is the climbing technique or ladder technique, he calls it, where if you feel that vibrational feeling happening, you imagine yourself pulling yourself up on a ladder or a rope or something. And I was doing that after I realized that this was a real phenomenon. I tried it and this is before I had any real experiences, but I was able to climb up to the top and it was like I was going to the top of an attic that's in a roof, in a ceiling, and you know, where you push the door up to get into. And I was doing that. And it seemed like there was something on the other side that was pushing the door shut. Like they didn't want me to come in. And I was really trying and really trying. And I got part of my body in there and they were put, and I could feel the sensation of something pushing on me. And then I just woke up.
I think you would have been smart not to try to go in there. If somebody's trying to keep you out, I don't think you should go in there.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I guess they were thinking that wasn't ready for this yet.
If I tried to get up in my attic and somebody was pushing back, I don't think I would keep pushing. Okay, let's see the next one. A panic attack, overwhelming surge of fear created by strange vibrations or sounds. Well, you probably, when you had that buzzing sound, you probably had something like a panic attack.
Really, the only thing I could say that where I was actually a panic attack, well, it was before I knew what they were. Yes, that was always a panic attack. Oh, my God, I'm having a brain hemorrhage or something. But the other panic, I would say, was when I was younger, I was working a lot of hours. I was in the restaurant business a long time ago in my early 20s and just working a lot of hours. And I would sometimes go home in the middle of the day and just take a nap for an hour. And I'd have some of these things happen then. And fairly often that banging sound. So I was living in an apartment with a roommate of mine and I was sleepy and he wasn't there. And all of a sudden this bang, like somebody shut the door hard coming in. And I would just be startled and jump out of bed and go. And there was nothing there. There was no one there.
Hmm. Yeah.
And this next one, I'll just go right into that same story because when we first moved into the apartment, this happened, hearing voices or footsteps. So we first moved in, we didn't have any or very little furniture there yet. And we lived within walking distance of the restaurant we were working at. And I went back home to, I don't know, probably do some things. But also, I was just really tired. So I took a nap and there was no furniture yet. So I just laid on the floor, which the kitchen went into the living room, and I was laying there. So the door that went out into the hallway of the apartment was probably 15, 20 feet away. And I was like, I think I had a pillow and a blanket and that. I was just laying on the floor taking a quick half hour nap when I heard footsteps coming down the hall. I heard the door open up and shut, and it didn't shut hard. But now here again, I was hearing all this, but my body felt paralyzed. I couldn't, and I heard the footsteps walk right over and stand right next to me. And I just assumed it was my roommate, but I was trying to roll my body to look up. I couldn't do it for a while. It felt like a minute or so. And finally, I was able to do it. And my roommate wasn't there, nor was anybody else.
So you were paralyzed where you couldn't do it, or you just were afraid to do it?
I was paralyzed. I could not get my body to do it. I assumed it was my roommate. And I wasn't afraid. I just thought, well, why is he here now? I forget what was going on at that time, but he wasn't supposed to be around at that time, or he was working, and he shouldn't have been coming home, one or the other. So I was just trying to get myself to look up and wake up, and I couldn't get my body felt paralyzed at that time.
Well, then when you realized your roommate wasn't there, I would think that might induce a panic attack.
Well, but I was awake at this time. Yes. I wasn't like, I just thought that is just the weirdest thing. I wasn't like totally afraid or anything. I just was shocked that of the experience I just had.
Yeah. Okay. How about seeing through closed eyelids? 49% experienced this.
Yeah, I can check that list too. That was the most amazing thing, I think, when I knew for sure that this was real. I was lying on my back at night getting ready to go to sleep, and I was thinking about things. I was still hadn't fallen asleep yet. And I was laying there, and the room was dark, but there was a little bit of light from the moon or something coming through one of the windows, so you could make out the corners between the wall and the ceiling and that sort of thing. And I forget, I was thinking about something, but I just thought, well, I got to get to sleep here. And so I have to close my eyes and go to sleep. And I all of a sudden realized when I did that, that my eyes were already closed. And yet I could see very little detail, just like I would if my eyes were open, just the little bit of light coming in, I could see the outlines of the room.
Well, I haven't experienced that, but that must have been somewhat terrifying or upsetting, no?
No, it was absolutely awesome.
Well, that isn't normal.
Well, according to what most of us know, but after I had already read William Buhlmann's first book, so I knew that he talked about this phenomenon. When it actually happened, then I knew if that were to happen and I didn't know of it, I didn't read about this, maybe I would have been startled, or maybe I thought I was going nuts or something, or maybe I would have just said, oh, obviously that didn't happen, and I just would slough it off. But knowing that this was one of the symptoms of this, I just was elated that it happened, that it was confirmation to me.
Mm-hmm. So you were prepared. If you wouldn't have been prepared, it might have been different.
Yes.
Well, the next one is lucid dreaming. 79% have experienced this one.
I think a lot of people have had that feeling. So in other words, a lucid dream is just you're having a dream and you all of a sudden realize that you're dreaming. So you're aware that you're dreaming, and then you're able to, if you want. So if you're having a dream that isn't necessarily pleasant, not necessarily a nightmare, but just isn't necessarily pleasant, and you go into a lucid dream, you can control the outcome. So you can change things around, and that you have control of your dream, and you're actually aware that you're dreaming.
I've experienced that to a small extent. I wish I could do that more often. Often I'll do it by waking up at least partially and thinking about what I had been dreaming about. And then I go right back to sleep and continue dreaming about whatever I was dreaming about. If I'm doing that, it must have been a pleasant experience. Otherwise, I don't think I would have wanted to go back to sleep if it would have been a nightmare of sorts.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, number 12, we're getting to the end of this list here. Seeing or feeling the presence of an unknown non-physical being. Now, only 22% of the survey respondents experienced this one.
And I can understand that, because if you get to that point, as we read William's experience, you're fully into an OBE. And a lot of the people, including myself, really are only just sort of cracking the door open and peering in and not really having the full experience yet. So that makes sense to me that just 22% actually get to that point. It, like anything, it takes practice.
Yeah, I don't think I'm one of those 22%. In fact, I'm pretty sure I'm not.
No. Well, we'll get to you in a minute with the next part that we're going to read after we're finished with this.
Okay. Well, finally, number 13, seeing, hearing, or speaking to a deceased loved one. Now here, almost 1/4 of the participants experienced 24%. Now, what we mentioned just a little, you know, when we started the podcast about, I think I mentioned that I have heard my father speak my name, and that has been while I was awake. I have seen and heard and spoke to a deceased loved one in my dream many times, but that's obviously just a dream. At least I think it's just a dream. But
yes, and I have an excerpt from one of William Buhlmann's book, the second one he wrote, which has the survey results in it that he took. It's called The Secret of the Soul, and this is very poignant, and it starts, "One of the most amazing out-of-body experiences is a fully conscious meeting with a loved one who has passed on. In the OBE survey that William conducted, 24% of the respondents' experiences involve contact with a departed loved one. In addition, 22% of the respondents saw or felt the presence of a non-physical being. Increasing evidence suggests that most contact is with individuals we have known at some point in our past. Often spirits are attracted to us because there is a connection to our soul group, a past life, or because there is an emotional or spiritual relationship that we are unaware of." And this is one of his respondents who told of her experience we're going to read next. "I was living in Michigan when my mother called from Maryland at about 1 a.m. to tell me that after a long illness, my father had passed away. After packing a bag and making airline reservations, I decided to lie down on my living room sofa to rest for about an hour or so before my flight. Suddenly, there was a sense of motion or vibration, and I found myself sitting in my parents' basement on a Danish-style couch that they had for years. There was a voice from around the corner. It sounded very much like my deceased mother-in-law's, that said, 'Susie, your daddy's here.' In an instant, I saw my father standing in front of me, a pipe in his mouth, dressed in a flannel shirt and brown Levi's. I said, 'What are you doing here? You're supposed to be dead. But you look great.' He opened his arms to me and said, 'Everything is good here. I feel great. I just wanted you to know.' I stood and embraced him. He seemed solid. And in an instant, I came back to my sofa in Michigan. It was that experience that convinced me beyond anything I had been told during my Catholic upbringing that there is existence beyond life. I am certain that we will meet again." And this was from Susan W.
Well, that experience, I think we've heard about similar experiences many times or quite often in the past, where people have seeing people that are supposedly dead and really truly are dead, but they look like they're in really good shape. And I'm sure it's a comforting experience. It might be terrifying at first, but I think it's also comforting that you're able to do that.
Yes. And I'm sure a lot of people who have never even felt any of these sensations are thinking, well, this is just too unbelievable. But if and when it happens to you, it has to happen to each individual. If they want proof of this, they can prove it to themselves. William goes on to say after this article that it is common for people who have died to remain relatively close to the physical world for several days after death. During this period, they often visit their loved ones and express their goodbyes. We often receive this communication during sleep. Many are unaware that during sleep, we move slightly out of sync with our biological bodies. This provides a potential window of direct communication with our minds. How we perceive and remember this communication is based on our awareness. Some have no recollection of the visitation, while others perceive the contact as a dream, ranging from a vague memory to an incredibly vivid interactive experience. Those who are trained and comfortable with out-of-body exploration possess an enormous advantage because their consciousness is far more open and prepared for this multidimensional contact and communication. In other words, they are far more likely to experience spiritual visitations in full awareness. Those who are fearful of spiritual contact remain largely unaware of the contact or interpret it as a fleeting dream. And Chuck, you've talked about having a dream about your father and how it seems pretty real to you.
Yes, and it has happened several times, not just once or twice, but several times. And
not just right after he passed away, but through the years too, correct?
Yeah, I've had one this year, and he died in 1997, so yeah, a long time ago.
So I'm the same way with a father that has passed away too, as well as other people that have passed away.
I think we've talked also about people that are near death, often stating that they see people, relatives. I remember my wife's grandmother who died several years ago, but while we were with her, as she was dying, she would talk about seeing her brother or her other relatives. And they would be there, and she was almost reaching physically with her hand out to them and pointing to where they were in the room. And I think that's quite common, too. I think many people have experienced relatives that were dying to have stated what I just stated about my wife's mother, your grandmother.
Yes. Okay, now we're going to go to what I referred to before, to Chuck, the commonly reported fears. And I know Chuck and I have talked about this a lot, and I know that he has some fears about even attempting this. The first one is fear of the unknown, 5%. Now, these people have had this experience, so these are going to be small percentages. But I think in the overall population, I would say the percentages would be much higher.
I would think so. I think it's important that you mention that these are people that have experienced it and maybe were comforted by it, but not the people that have never experienced it. And the fear, like you said, of the unknown, once they have the experience, it's not unknown anymore, at least.
Yeah, and I will absolutely say when I was having those electrical sensations in my head before I knew what it was, I was completely fearful of it. As I said, I thought it was a physical malady of some sorts that was rather serious.
Mm-hmm.
This is the one that I know that you have a great fear of, and it's unable to return to the body, and here it's only 4% of the people.
Well, William Buhlman obviously is very experienced at this kind of a thing, and he knows just how to do what he does when he travels outside of his body. But what if you or me, somebody, a novice in this situation, we get out there and I don't know how to get back. Now what do I do?
Well, and I've had you read his books in the past. It may have been years ago, so maybe you don't remember this. But the way he explains it is that the trick is getting and staying out of body, because the very thought, just one thought of your physical body snaps you back into it. So the trick is to stay outside of it long enough to have an actual experience. So that's why he's saying you shouldn't have this fear, because it can't happen.
Well, that's easy for him to say for somebody else. And I know I remember that too, that it's hard to stay into the out-of-body experience. But they're still also thinking, well, what if I'm different? What if I'm not the kind of guy that can snap back in quickly. And it's probably unfounded fear, but yeah, I have that.
Yes. And the next one is interaction with a non-physical being. Yeah. Again, it's only 3% here, but people that don't know what this is, if it happened and they saw something. Now, this could be where many of the people that are completely unaware of this phenomenon, and they see ghosts, or they see, as we said before, shadow people, or other terrifying phenomena in the middle of the night, it could be nothing more than them becoming aware in an OBE.
Mm-hmm.
Now, fear of death, that's only 2% here, but I would think a lot of people, as you would think, Chuck, if you are afraid of not being able to return to your body, then the next thought would be, if I can't return to my body, that means I'm dead.
Well, right. What if this is simply a process by which many people do die? A lot of these people do come back, like William Buhlman and other out-of-body experiencers. But what about the ones that have had out-of-body experiences that continued on to death? Only we don't know about it because we don't know if they had this out-of-body experience before they had death. Now, I understand the whole concept of the exhilarating experience of an out-of-body experience, the excitement of it, the enrichment that your mind would have. But, John, I also know that climbing Mount Everest can be exhilarating. Jumping out of a plane as a sky jumper or a skydiver could be exhilarating. But I don't want to do those things, even though they'd be exhilarating. I think, no, I'm comfortable where I am.
When everybody dies, they do go through this process. That's exactly what it is. Mm-hmm. So if you do it ahead of time when you're not fearing that you won't be coming back because it's not your time to die yet, and you understand how to operate in that dimension that you are going to travel to when, in fact, you do die. So this is a preparation for yourself to get it right when you have to.
Well, I understand what you're saying. It's somewhat of a leap of faith thinking that I'd be able to just use this as a preparation. So you're probably right. And it's probably like anything else that one hasn't experienced. Once you experience it, hey, it's a piece of cake. Nothing,
yes.
Nothing to it.
And I'll just say that William Buhlman's next book that will have come out sometime, I think it's supposed to come out in August of 2016, so it will be out by the time people hear this podcast, is just about that. It's about how to prepare yourself or anyone for death.
Okay.
Now, I'm just going to run through these quickly because really they're all part of the same. So it's possession, 2% fear. Possession, William Buhlman discusses this in his books, that nothing can enter your body when you leave it. He does have some protection things to go through, but really it's not anything to fear. The fear of paralysis, experiencing evil, and becoming lost. Now, the experiencing evil, these are all just either 2 or 1% of the respondents. That's why I think it's why William Buhlman is the one to learn from, to read his books, because other people that have written books about this discuss a lot of things pertaining to negative entities, I guess we'll call it. The thing is that, I don't know, I guess I've got an analogy here. I like to use the term universal life force. You could call it God or just everything, but the universal life force, it's sort of like an operating system or a program where everyone, regardless of beliefs, access when they die, when they have an OBE or an NDE. And indeed, we're accessing it every moment we're here on Earth as well. It's just that when we're here, it's much more dense and things take a lot longer to manifest. But religious people and atheists alike will experience what they think, what they believe, because the astral dimensions are thought-based, where things manifest much faster than they do here. A religious person will create their version of heaven, and that's what they'll see. William's third book, Adventures in the Afterlife, describes this perfectly. An atheist will create or see nothing. But eventually, they're going to realize that they are there experiencing nothing, and at any point may choose to experience something. So, do you understand what I'm talking about there, Chuck?
I do understand what you're talking about, and that could be correct. But how do we know for sure? The only people that really know for sure are the people that have died and are into that state.
Or the people that are learning how to have out-of-body experiences.
Well, that's assuming that the out-of-body experience is going to be the same thing as actually dying. And I don't think they're the same thing. It might be.
They are exactly the same thing. It's the same experience.
How do we know? Only the people that have died know that.
Well,
for sure.
I'm basing it on William Buhlmann, who's got some 50 years of experience and who has been there countless times and is saying that it's the same exact thing.
But he hasn't died. And that's the difference. I mean, we can go back and forth on this point, and I mean, your chances are very good that you're right and he's right, but I just don't know for sure if he's right.
No, but if you were to follow his techniques and learn to do what he does, then you would be sure.
It would just be so overwhelmingly convincing that there would be no doubt in my mind, apparently.
Absolutely no doubt in your mind. Because, you know why? Because he's visiting all of his loved ones that have died. And he's talked to them and he's physically embraced them there. And he knows what they're telling him. That's why he knows that death is the same experience.
When we started this podcast today, John, we both pretty much agreed that we'd be having some differences. And obviously they're showing up right now in our attitudes towards this topic.
Yeah, well, we knew this because we've had these conversations, as I said before. So,
right. And here they are.
But I think it's good that we have differing opinions, because I know a lot of our listeners probably feel the same way you do. And I think it's good that we're having this interaction.
I agree.
And I will say that it's not just William Buhlmann who has confirmed this. As I said, I've read other people's material on this. And they also have the same experiences and confirmation that an out-of-body experience is exactly what will happen when you eventually do die. And some of the other surveys, it said the average age of the first out-of-body experience that people remember is between 4 and 12 years old. And this is often a repeated experience that declines during the early teenage years. And I think it's because children at a younger age are not quite as formed in their opinion, so they can allow this experience to more easily happen once we become adults and learn about all kinds of things like different religions and that. You kind of close yourself off to this.
That reminds me of something somewhat related, not necessarily to out-of-body experience, but I have known at least one relative who, as a child, probably in that 4 to 12 year range somewhere, she experienced having a friend that she would talk to, imaginary friend, but she would actually talk to that person. But as she grew older, it went away. So it's similar to the age category you're talking about with out-of-body experiences.
Yes, and just think how many children talk about imaginary friends and how many of those imaginary friends may not necessarily be imaginary.
And it's not terrifying for those kids.
Not at all. It's natural. Yes, they were feeling natural. It's a natural thing. When they have their experience like that, they're thinking everybody's doing this, so they don't even really think it's abnormal. They mention it in passing. Oh, yeah, I played with my friend last night when I was asleep.
Yeah.
Now, William Buhlmann has stated that some of the symptoms on this list that we just went through are stronger indications of OBEs than others. For example, seeing through closed eyelids is a very strong indication that a person has already separated and is already OBE. spinning, sinking, or floating is also a much stronger indication of an OBE. Sleep paralysis or being touched or lifted are also strong indicators. Hearing voices or footsteps is nebulous because you could also be in a psychic state. Lucid dreaming doesn't mean that you are out of body at all, but some people experience a lucid dream and then they have an OBE or it is converted into an OBE. There is a link to a story from the epochtimes.com about six stories that could make you believe in out-of-body experiences. We're not going to go through those. We just have so much material to discuss, but I just wanted to mention we do have a link to the story if anybody's interested in reading it. But we will read a few stories from another article, which we do have, and they have many stories about people that have experienced an OBE that they had sent into them, and we'll just read a couple of those. These are from beyondreligion.com.
Well, I'll read that first one, John, where I saw my mother miles away. I want to share my out-of-body experience in hopes it might shine a light into those like me seeking answers. Since I was very young, I suffer from sleep paralysis. As I got older, the episodes got longer, more intense. I soon started having lucid dreams, then shortly after out-of-body experiences. It was not until about 2 years ago that I was able to confirm that they were in fact out-of-body experiences and not just dreams. One night, I had an episode. First, my body was paralyzed. Then I felt a strong current through my body. And lastly, a strong yank, as if my soul was being pulled from my physical body. I started flying. I wound up in front of my mom, who lived 5 hours away from me. I could feel myself light, almost transparent. I floated. My vision, what I was seeing, seemed quite lucid, yet dreamlike. When I woke up from this dream, I decided to test what I had seen by calling my mom and asking her what she was wearing. I described to her what I had seen in my dream, from what she was wearing to where she was and whom she was with. She got quiet and asked how I knew all that information. I told her. Ever since then, I now know that those dreams I had following a sleep paralysis episode weren't in fact dreams, but out-of-body experiences, astral projection, or clairvoyance. I'm now learning the ability to somewhat control and even trigger these episodes. Sometimes when I lie on my arm to the point that it starts going numb, then the rest of my body starts going numb also and causes an episode.
And that was from February 2016 of this year.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to read one from, this is from May of 2006 that was sent into beyondreligion.com titled Peace and Happiness. I would like to share my one and only OBE. It happened to me in late 1990. I was at home and watching some TV after dinner. I usually go to bed about 11 p.m. However, that night, I was a bit tired and turned in earlier at about 9:30. I seemed to fall asleep almost immediately. In what felt like just a few minutes, I was awakened from my sleep and got up. I felt a bit disoriented, but very much awake and aware. I looked back at my bed and noticed that my body was lying in my bed, still asleep. My view was not at ground level. I was floating near the ceiling, about 6 or 7 feet up. My feeling was one of peace and happiness. It was a feeling that I am still unable to completely describe. I realized that no matter what, everything was going to happen as it should. As I was basking in this feeling, I became aware that everything was unfolding as it should in the universe, that there was nothing to worry about, and all would be well. This peace and serenity still gives me strength today. Even though I was raised in a religious home, I was never keen on religion, but always interested in things spiritual. This was a strong message to me that our own spiritual journey is really part of living out our lives. This helped me to realize that spiritual freedom could be achieved through freedom from religion. There was no doubt in my mind that this event actually occurred and was not a dream. This is from Kevin.
Well, I'm going to do that childhood out-of-body experience. At around age 9 or 10, I recall vividly experiencing OBEs. At the time, I did not know what they were, but I knew how to will myself to have one. Now, this is a child, 9 or 10, being able to will himself or herself to have one. I looked forward to going to bed at night, for that is when I would will an OBE. It would be at that moment, just before sleep, and I could consciously feel my spirit move away from my body, and I would be in another room somewhere. I would float around and go where I needed to go. But I always knew somehow that my spirit needed to rejoin my body. It was as if this was kept in the forefront of my consciousness. When I did return, I knew the exact moment and would experience a sense of relief that I had returned. I see this young person was still fearful after experiencing the OBEs, just wanted to make sure that he could return. Immediately after this, I would slip into a peaceful sleep, but a sleep that would have dreams that were very vivid. My dreams around this time would be of me running with my arms outwards and then floating off into the air. I would always be in a clearing in a forest somewhere. I live on a small island and there is no forest here. A friend would be with me. I miss these dreams and OBEs. Somehow, I cannot have them anymore.
Yeah, and that's interesting that he was having these without really any knowledge like I had had by reading William's books about it. So maybe if he were to read some of the material that William Buhlmann has written, that he may start having them again. I will say that when I started reading his books, and every time I would read one of his books, and I usually read it before I go to bed at night, and then go to bed, and that's when I would have a spontaneous beginnings, at least, of an OBE. So just the mere reading of the material sometimes can initiate that feeling. And we'll just read another one about somebody who actually visited the Monroe Institute. I have had many OBEs and learned so much more by attending several weekly programs at the Monroe Institute, founded by Robert Monroe in Faber, Virginia. The programs are very well organized and operated by true professionals. I was also able to meet and talk with like-minded individuals who attended the programs from all over the world. Each weekly group has about 20 to 25 people. The Monroe Institute has also created many different types of CDs and program sets that are helpful teaching tools to achieve different states and levels of consciousness. They can be used for healing, meditation, and guidance for almost any part of your life. They act as training wheels at first while you are trying to learn a meditation technique. After you have listened and learned how to obtain a desired level of meditation, you can then do so without using the CD. I happened to attend a Monroe Institute program that also included three Buddhist monks, and they said the tapes helped them attain a level of meditation in just a few hours of listening that had taken them 10 years to learn on their own. I have traveled through space, talked with my spirit guides, and even met my brother and a close friend who both had died a few years earlier. There is so much more to life and death than can ever be taught or accepted by so many traditional religions today. I like to say, when people ask me to donate money to a church, that I didn't know that God had a cash flow problem. I am always willing to help a person in need, but building castles for God isn't what I think they are for. A lot of people think that lucid dreaming and OBEs are the same thing. I have had many experiences of both and can tell you they are completely separate experiences. There are numerous levels of dreaming and several types of OBEs, some in this physical realm and others in non-physical realms, and even mixtures of both. I've sometimes thought that the dark matter that scientists are looking for, that they believe makes up 96% of our universe's mass, may be the energy systems of our dimensions or non-physical realms that have a gravitational pull or attachments to our physical universe. It is all so much more than most can even imagine. And I like that last part, Chuck, when he's talking about, because I've had that same thought, that this dark matter or dark energy that they can't seem to define, it could just be all of these other realms.
Yeah, that is very interesting.
And in regards to his talking about religions, there is another excerpt from William's book, Secret of the Soul, that I'd like to read now, which has to do with that. Most of the religions around the world are essentially based on profound out-of-body experiences of a small group of individuals who consciously explore the spiritual dimensions of reality. Practically every religious movement known today refers to out-of-body states of consciousness. Unfortunately, many people remain unaware of this critical connection that heavily influenced all religions. And we'll just go into a couple here that he mentions. Muhammad, Swedenborg, the Sufis, yogi masters, shamans, the biblical saints, and modern out-of-body travelers have all explored the subtle realms of the universe. They have all experienced the multidimensional universe and have described what they encountered there based on their individual cultural viewpoint. And that's an important point. These cutting-edge explorers traveled far beyond the established norms of science and religion. They blazed a trail that all of humanity must eventually follow. Their exploration is critically important to us because there is no escaping the fact that each of us will eventually return to the inner dimensions of reality as we experience the ultimate out-of-body adventure, that is, death. When you examine the lives of these great spiritual leaders, you find that they all had one thing in common. All experienced profound personal spiritual adventures beyond the limits of their bodies. Their lives were not directed by the prevailing religious and social beliefs, but based upon their individual experiences and the insights they gained from those explorations. Many of these great spiritual explorers were considered radicals because they didn't follow the established religious norms of their day. Most important, the great spiritual explorers were not just believers. They were courageous explorers of consciousness, explorers of the unseen dimensions of God. The doctrine-immersed theologians who dominate today's religious traditions may never truly comprehend or experience the mystical explorations of Jesus, Muhammad, and others. The simple act of memorizing religious texts or just believing in words does not bring wisdom, understanding, or an authentic spiritual awakening. It requires true courage to explore beyond the dense limits of the body and the prevailing beliefs of man. It takes daring determination to transcend the flesh and enter the ethereal realms of spirit. It takes personal experience beyond the body to even begin to comprehend the thought-responsive realities that are encountered during a profound out-of-body adventure. True spiritual leaders have little need for the beliefs of others, for they are self-directed by spirit. History teaches us that personal spiritual experience is the key to our existence and our evolution. A good example of this is found in the book of Revelation. For 2,000 years, biblical scholars have studied and attempted to interpret this magnificent text. The end result is a futile attempt to find logical religious symbolism where it does not exist. Simply put, Revelation, the Quran, and many other spiritual texts are primarily personal journals of the exploration and observations of the thought-responsive inner dimensions of reality. The only way to truly understand these mystical observations is to experience the subtle spiritual dimensions for yourself. And William also contends that the discoveries of out-of-body explorers are far more important than we can even begin to imagine. In fact, they represent a true quantum leap in the evolution of our species. These explorers may be so advanced that our current physical immersed states of consciousness cannot acknowledge, much less comprehend, the sheer magnitude of their discoveries. As modern science continues to concentrate on particles of matter, a few brave souls are exploring and mapping the unseen universe. These explorers have discovered incredible dimensions of reality that exist just beyond our own vision. Their discoveries are far more important than a few rocks from the moon. In fact, all existing human discoveries pale in light of this new knowledge. I find it amusing that every day we swim in a magnificent ocean of multidimensional energy while our sciences are still examining the grains of sand on the beach. How long will it take us to recognize that the greatest discoveries of humanity are those of the existence of the multidimensional universe? of our multidimensional nature and of our place within this incredible ocean of consciousness. So there he is talking about both religion and science, who are coming at this from two completely different angles, and neither of them are getting the full answer.
He states that this new frontier, that probably wasn't his words, but it's a new adventure, it's a new experience. I think this OBE experience has been around a long time, not necessarily where you can induce it yourself, although I think that was probably true also. Obviously, we talked about many times uninduced OBEs, so it's not just at this time in history that these uninduced OBEs are happening. Obviously, they must have happened throughout all of mankind's history, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely, and he talks about that. He's meaning new in that we're just beginning to study it and to actually look into it, but there are examples that he gives. For instance, the Bible has people talking about having OBEs in there, so it's been around forever. It's just that when people read those stories in the Bible, they're not looking at it as, oh, this person was actually having an out-of-body experience, a spiritual experience. So they use terms like, you know, I was in the spirit of the Lord, and that's, he's saying that's an out-of-body experience. One of them, which we did a podcast on recently about Ezekiel's wheels, and William wrote in his book, The Secret of the Soul, the Bible and the Quran are overflowing with vivid references to out-of-body travel. For example, in Ezekiel chapter 3, verse 12, it is stated, "Then the Spirit lifted me up, and I heard behind me the noise of the Lord rumbling as the glory of the Lord rose from its place." Ezekiel goes on to describe dozens of out-of-body experiences throughout his writings. And he talks about several other verses in religious texts that are describing out-of-body experiences. So, yeah, so what he means when he said this new, what was the exact word he used? He says, in light of this new knowledge. So it's just that we're becoming aware of what an OBE is.
I understand that, but I think people throughout history have been aware of it. Maybe not putting it in the same words that he's putting it in, but I think...
But here's the thing. Back then, when these people were having their experiences and they were all called prophets or special people, that they were having this for some special reason, and people didn't realize back then that anyone could have this experience.
Okay.
And that's where a lot of the religion came from, were all of these experiences. And so instead of people realizing, hey, we can all do that, we can all get this experience and learn from it, they immediately started making religions and making these people special, and only they know what the story is and how this works. So we all have to listen to them, and that's how religion has gotten to where it is today.
Well, isn't that what William Buhlmann's doing? He says he knows how to do this. So he said, listen to me. He's almost doing the same thing that he's accusing.
No, he's saying this is how you do it, and you can find out for yourself. There's no religion that has done that. They all say exactly what you just said. Listen to me. I know. I'm the one that's talking to God, or I'm the one that knows how to do this, and this is what he's telling you to do. William Buhlmann is just giving you all the tools necessary to discover this for yourself, and then you can find out your own answers. He's not telling you anything other than how the whole operating system works.
I don't think I was listening to one of the podcasts that he had an interview that you told me about, John, and in that he was quite critical of religions, and I don't think he needed to be critical of religions. I think it's fine that he can express his opinions, but he repeatedly stated that religions don't do this, they don't do that. And that's fine, and he wants to believe that, but I don't think it's so important that he keeps talking about that. Like when I talked about my fear of going on an OBE experience, it had nothing to do with religion. It had to do with just my fear of, just like I told you about jumping out of an airplane, it would be the same thing. And it hasn't anything to do with religion indoctrinating me to the point that I don't want to have an out-of-body experience.
Well, you're right. He doesn't have to say that about religions necessarily. You will find that out when you start experience, if you are able to learn how to have out-of-body experiences, and you will discover it for yourself what has been happening. However, you know, his book, and I think you read that too. I think I gave you that book, his last one, Adventures in the Afterlife.
Yeah, you did.
Where it's a fictional account, but he had cancer, and obviously he was well able to do out-of-body exploring at that time, and it's really a fictional account of some of the things that he went through during this process. And it's a very good example of talking about religion and talking about after people die that are religious and how they form. And he calls them collective thought forms. So, you know, many souls create, as I was trying to talk about earlier, about how people, everybody creates their own reality here and there. So whatever you see, you're actually creating it. And sometimes collective thought forms of many people form a collective dimension. The best analogy I can think of right now is, remember, Chuck, in the series Lost?
Uh-huh.
And how towards the end they were showing there were two different realities happening at the same time.
Right.
And one where everybody was happy and everything, where they were living in a nice neighborhood, and it was kind of odd, you know, trying to think about what was happening there. What they were depicting was that that's where they were. They were in sort of an in-between dimension where they had created everything the way they wanted it, and they were waiting for the rest of their group in that plane crash to meet them there before they moved on.
Yeah, now that you bring that up, that show could have ended so much better. But we've talked about that before.
Yeah, but I think they did a good point of depicting this particular area.
Yes, you're right.
But the point of OBE, I think that I know William Beelman has used this term, own your power. Everybody has this amazing ability. And what he probably means to say is that in the forming of organized religion, they are the ones that are basically taking the power. So they just tell you to come to church and they'll be the ones talking with God, and they'll tell you how to do things and how to get by this and that. Whereas William is saying that by doing this, you are the one that takes control of your life, and you don't need to go through other people.
Well, this reminds me somewhat of other writers and philosophers of sort. I think we mentioned Wayne Dyer in the past. This reminds me a lot of Wayne Dyer. Well, he wasn't advocating out-of-body experiences, but he was advocating take control of your life, experience this, and then experience that, and whatever else he might have mentioned. But I think the message was the same. It's you have the power to take control. And I think that's what this William Buhlman is stating also.
Yes, I agree. I agree completely. And although, as you said, I never heard him specifically talk about that, I would be quite surprised if Wayne Dyer wasn't able to have out-of-body experiences.
Yeah, maybe.
And we have a link to another story. This is from TheBlaze.com. It's titled, Scientists Scanned Woman's Brain During an Out-of-Body Experience, and this is what they found. And it's just a story about a lady who was having out-of-body experiences, and they did an MRI in her brain while supposedly she was having one. And it's just interesting how they discuss what they saw scientifically in that. The thing is, it's just interesting. Now, I wanted to try to show that both religion and science are they're just not approaching this area, because here science is still trying to find an answer to this OBE experience, this out-of-body experience phenomena in the brain itself. And they're just not even considering, or maybe they just have no way of measuring that we are more than our bodies.
Well, we've talked about science in the past many times where proof is required for their theorems. And if they don't have proof, if a scientist doesn't have proof, then the validity is not there. And that's where we often run across a problem with many of the topics, not just this topic, John, but many of the topics that we talk about. You don't have physical proof that you can chart with an X-ray or with a CAT scan or something else that describes what's happening. And because of that, scientists often, I guess I'll use the words, poo-poo the information relating to strange experiences or unusual experiences.
Yeah. And again, I just wanted to mention once again that we have a link also to the MonroeInstitute.org where William Buhlmann conducts his out-of-body exploration intensive. And they do give a list. They call it an action plan for anyone interested in pursuing their own OBE experience. And, we could read all that, but we'll not do that. Anybody interested can click on that link and explore further. And I know I've been talking a lot about William Buhlmann here. And I mean, we're not getting anything from him or his organizations for talking about this. It's just that I firmly believe this is a very good way of finding out more on this information. All of his books and his CDs and all that are all available now on Amazon.com. So, you could help us out if you're going to think about buying one of his books by clicking on our link first. We'd appreciate that a lot, but that would be the only way we'd get any sort of incentive from doing this.
Well, we're not in this to get incentive out of it. That's just,
No.
It's just a side.
It's something that I feel very strongly about, and I wanted to do this before we ended our podcasts. And the reason I do feel strongly about it is because of what I said before about the symptoms I've had, the sensation of seeing through closed eyelids. I've also had this feeling when I had my eyes closed and I was in that hypnagogic state of seeing a light above my head. And I'd open my eyes and there was no light there, so it's just, it's another phenomenon. So the one time, Chuck, I think I told you about this years ago when I was single still and I was sleeping. I was asleep. It was the middle of the night and I was suddenly awakened from being asleep to being fully aware, hyper aware, as I like to call it. And all of a sudden I was in that vibrational state. And the next thing I knew, I was floating above my body several feet. It was all dark still in my room, but there were countless points of colored, multicolored lights all around me. And I could see in all directions. And it was just such an ecstatic feeling. And at one point, I'm guessing it lasted for no longer than a minute, because at one point it was such a great feeling that I actually kind of giggled and took a big breath. And at that point, it ended right away. So this is another confirmation. And though this is after I had discovered William Buhlmann's material. So I was able to kind of make it last a little longer and actually experience it somewhat.
So have you been practicing on a regular basis to experience, to induce one?
Certainly not for the last 2 years, Chuck. I haven't had any time to do anything extra.
Yeah.
But I do have the material, and I think I plan on definitely doing this in the future, because I did have a couple other experiences that I wanted to talk about here. The next one was in our house before we had this one, where I had a lot of these other experiences I talked about with the closed eyelids and that. All of a sudden, again, I was awakened from the middle of the night to having
into that hyper-awareness state, and I had the sensation of floating through the house. I went through from the second story where I was sleeping to the first story and then down into the basement. And when I got, and I was looking at the basement and I could see it was all dark, but our basement was completely empty and I could see the light from the window coming from the street light on that side of the house. And I was there for just a moment and then it ended, but it was a very real feeling. And when it ended and I was completely awake in my room, I thought, oh, that was unbelievable. But I thought, why was the basement empty? Well, we had so much stuff in that basement. It was a small house and the basement was completely filled with extra furniture that we didn't have room. It was a smaller house. And then within that year, we had built a new house and moved into it. And it was really hectic getting, we had to, obviously, like everybody, when you have to move and you have a lot of stuff. And I just remember at one point, we finally got the last bit of stuff loaded and we were leaving. And I went down to check to make sure everything was taken out. And I walked down the basement and I stood in that same exact place and I looked. And of course, it was light because it was during the day. But I was all by myself and I just looked and I thought, oh, wow. This is incredible. This is exactly what I saw when I had that experience.
Well, that's similar to some of the stories we talked about today from other people. They witnessed it in their OBEs. And so would you consider that just a dream or an actual OBE?
Oh, no, there was no way it was a dream. Yeah, it was an actual, I was completely conscious and aware.
What would it be then? Would it be an OBE then in your mind?
Absolutely, yes.
But you didn't induce it yourself, and that's what you have not.
It was what would be referred to as a spontaneous OBE. So yes, it happened. I had already fallen asleep, and I don't remember how long I had been asleep. I don't know if I even looked at the clock at that point, but it was in the middle of the night sometime, which is when this seems to happen for me. And one other time, we were vacationing in Maine, and I was actually reading, this was a few years ago, just after his last book came out, Adventures in the Afterlife. I was sitting in the bedroom of the rented house we were staying in, and I was reading this book, and then I went to sleep shortly after. And I woke up, and I was having that vibrational sensation again, and I started using William's climbing technique, where I was pulling myself up on a ladder. And at this point, I was actually, all of a sudden, the vibrational state, I could still feel it was still happening. So I don't know if I fully came out of it, but I was standing in some other place. It was under something big that I think it was on legs, but I'm not sure. And I was looking out and it seemed sunny all around, but I was covered. This thing was above my head. I could stand up all the way, but it was, and I don't know what it was. And I actually was kind of walking. I was trying to look up to see what the heck I was looking at. And I looked out and it was sunny. And I actually saw what seemed like a woman and a child or something were walking around. It almost seemed like a carnival, like atmosphere or fair or something. And I started walking around to try to look up, what the heck am I standing on? Where am I? And then it ended.
Wow.
And those are pretty much all the experiences I can think of, at least the profound ones that have happened to me.
I should probably elaborate a little bit on why I feel differently than you do, why I'm more, I guess the word is fearful of something like an out-of-body experience. I know, I think I told you about the times when I was younger, probably in that same age range that you talked about, late teens to early 20s, where I would experience myself having, I guess it would be similar to an out-of-body experience, that it wasn't where I'd be traveling all over the place. It would be as if I was right next to my body, not, you know, miles away or...
And that's how most of them are, Chuck. Yeah, exactly.
And I remember one in particular where it was a winter time and I was ice skating and I felt like I was outside of my body, next to my body, ice skating. And I don't remember looking at my body and seeing it. I just had that feeling that I was there. But it wasn't a pleasant experience for me. It was something that was unpleasant. And I remember I had a physical for some reason not too long after that. And I mentioned it to the doctor. And the doctor said to me, well, are you under a lot of stress lately? So to the doctor, when he heard what I described, apparently he had heard that from other people. And to him, it meant stress. And that's what I always associated with stress. And to just go on a little further, I remember when I was younger than that, probably 8 or 10, I had a high fever one time. And I remember having this sensation that my hands were like about 3 or 4 times larger than they were. And that was a very unpleasant experience also. It was an experience that I was out of control of what my reality was. And that's what I don't like. I don't like it when I take a medication, a pain medication, maybe that a dentist gives me that puts me out of control of my reality. I don't like that experience. I'm not one that would want to experiment with psychedelic drugs because of that. I don't want to be out of control. And that's carries over into my attitude towards out of body experience. I'm sure I can understand your excitement about the out-of-body experience. It does sound fantastic. It does sound exhilarating to imagine doing what you can do while you're having that experience. But I also have that, perhaps it's overshadowed by everything else, but it's that feeling of wanting to be in control of my being.
Well, that's interesting because William Buhlmann uses that exact term, that you are in control of your experience. And by having out-of-body experiences, you learn to have complete control and not turn it over to anyone else.
That is interesting. Yeah.
And let me just read this because I bookmarked this spot in his book that talks about negative experiences. And this is what he says about that. I believe that our life experiences are neither good nor bad. We place meaning on everything we do. Look back at your life. How many times has a perceived negative experience propelled you to dramatically grow or change in unexpected ways? The same applies to out-of-body experiences. Many times, out-of-body and near-death experiences act as an abrupt spiritual call to action. Sometimes we need to be shaken from life's daily routine in order to grow. Each experience is a tool of learning and evolution. There is increasing evidence that so-called spontaneous OBEs are actually highly planned events orchestrated by a higher aspect of your psyche. Our higher self or soul creates them for a specific purpose. Often the experiences initiate a dramatic shift in consciousness and perception, opening us to new levels of personal growth.
That's interesting. That always reminds me of that. I don't know how true it is, but I often heard the Chinese use the same word for crisis and opportunity. So it's, you have maybe a bad experience, but it's also an opportunity to experience something good.
Yes. And I know we talked, you know, there are just so many points that I wanted to make here. And I think one of the things that we haven't really stressed too much is that there are so many different levels of an out-of-body experience that William goes into. And as I said, for people that are interested in this, obviously, I highly recommend they read one of his books or all of his books, whatever interests you. The first one, Adventures Beyond the Body, is basically a how-to book on it. And then the second one, as I said, is The Secret of the Soul, which goes into the information that he obtained from many of his people that he surveyed. And then the third one, Adventures in the Afterlife, is more of a fictional account of what he has discovered in the astral plane and those other dimensions. But he has also said that there are many dimensions in the afterlife. And he says, heaven is not a place. It's millions of states of consciousness inhabited by trillions of souls. And there are different dimensions. As you said, usually if somebody has an out-of-body experience, there are like some of the accounts that we read where they all of a sudden they're there, they think they're normal, and they turn around, they see their body there. And if they walk to the refrigerator to get a drink, they might their hand would go through the refrigerator because they're in their astral form and that sort of thing. Then other people go to higher states where there is no physical form. And then there's what he refers to as the astral plane, which is this place that he talks about in the Adventures in the Afterlife, where there are people just like they are here. People that have passed on that are living there just as they live here. It's a very interesting topic indeed.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, well, the other thing that I've heard him say, and I firmly believe too, that if everyone on Earth were to have an OBE, were to experience a full OBE, that all conflict here would end. I think people would become very ecstatic and knowing it would just help so much the overall consciousness of the Earth.
Well, I'm anxious to find out what you experience when you finally do induce one for yourself.
Yes, and well, that might be something in the future that I would like to hear from other people that may have had this or now are interested in it and start looking into it. I would love to have people email me about their experiences or if they'd like to talk with me, and I will put it on the podcast if they would like me to. The other thing I'd like to say about this too is that this one area of exploring out-of-body experiences could lead to answers to many of the mysterious topics that we have covered on this show the last 2 years, and as well as some that we haven't yet covered or will not cover.
Well, I hope it provides answers to time travel, because that's the one I'm curious about.
Yeah, and that's one of my favorites too. And that one I talked about where I saw the basement emptied out, and then I don't know, 6 to 9 months later, whatever it was emptied out. That gives me an indication, and also reading some other stories like that gives me an indication there might be some sort of time travel element involved. Of course, in that afterlife dimension, I don't think that time really exists. So that may be the answer to that.
You could be right. You probably are.
Well, Chuck, you know, there is so much about this topic. We could probably contemplate it and discuss it and go back and forth for a couple more hours, but I think this has been long enough for today.
Well, I think we did cover many of the main points related to OBEs and to our attitudes towards them. And just because I don't have the same enthusiasm that you do towards OBEs doesn't mean I don't believe that they're possible. I really do believe they're possible. I just don't know if I want to have one intentionally.
For fear of many of the things that we talked about today.
Right.
Well, I wish I was able to help alleviate those fears, but I guess I can't today.
No, but at least I think we had a good discussion about it, and hopefully our listeners enjoyed it.
Yes, I hope for that too. I would just like to say there is so much more on this on our link to the out-of-body experience story at our website, mysteriestopics.com. And please go there to find out more. And this is John.
And this is Chuck. And please visit us also at our Facebook page. And goodbye.
Thank you for listening. Goodbye. Thank you.